Hey, everybody. Welcome to the initial podcast on innovation at DMA. My name is Bill Spencer.
My name is Cody Starkin.
And we are your innovation integration team. You know, we have an agenda, right, Cody?
Yeah.
You're going to share the agenda with the folks?
Yeah. So this being the first podcast, we're trying to look to be able to establish a way to talk to our people today at DMA about the innovation program and what we're all about, and help try to share some ideas that will help allow our people to become more productive, become more engaged, empowered, to look at different ways how we do our processes here at DMA and try to discover new things and help us become better as an organization. So today we're going to talk a little bit more about what innovation is, and with the remaining time we're going to look at talking about some ideas and kind of giving you examples of what we found on the internet that kind of helps push what we're trying to get across to everybody.
What we're really trying to do is foster community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and cause that to grow. And so it's more about sharing ideas than it is necessarily telling you what something is, right? So I just want to make sure that, you know, the folks know that we want them to be involved.
Yeah, we're not directing or telling people how to innovate, and we're not doing that. If you're familiar with our Facebook site, if you search Innovation Program or Innovation DMA Innovation Program on Facebook, you can see some of the examples that we're trying to provide with Bill and I, but just linking different ideas and things like that. It's not necessarily saying that we need to adopt in these processes, but to maybe take and borrow from them what would work and be more conducive to our organization.
So to start off with, I'm going to try and give them a definition of what innovation really is and what we're talking about when we say innovation.
Okay.
A lot of folks think that when we see innovation, they're thinking invention. I'm constantly talking with folks around the command, and they think, okay, we're going to make a new product. It's going to be an innovation. I'm like, no. I want you to think of innovation. And this is, I'm going to try and set the stage here for some of the other things I'd like to share.
Sure.
So innovation is really, if you are a little kid, and this is the best example that I could come up with. You know, when I was a little kid, my mother would allow me, I mean, this is a little kid, would allow me to make crazy things. You know, banana, chickpea milkshakes. because I was experimenting.
Yes.
Right? And I was exploring, and I used whatever I had inside the kitchen. I couldn't go out and get things. I could only use what was in the kitchen. And I would have these crazy innovations, you know, pickle, pimento, potato chip sandwiches,
mm-hmm.
you know, just whatever. But my point is that I couldn't leave the kitchen. Whatever was in the kitchen was what I could make the recipe out of.
Right.
And that's kind of what innovation is, really. You know, it can be a part of invention. You know, the pickle, pimento loaf, banana potato chip sandwich was definitely an innovation, not one that caught on, obviously.
Well, that's so upsetting.
But the point is that I took what was, as a child, now we're talking as a child, you know, here, you know, it was a new creation, but it was an innovation made out of, or a creation made out of, the ingredients that were available to me. And that's what we're talking about here at DMA. We're not talking about necessarily getting ingredients outside of the kitchen. The kitchen is what you have available with what you're working with. You know, we're talking about MacGyver stuff.
Mm.
You know, that's the MacGyver moment when he's able to escape the maximum security prison with nothing more than a toothpick and a paperclip. You know, yeah, that was what made him MacGyver. You know, he innovated. And so, you know, other things. So innovation is really reinvention, or as I like to say, making something mo better, right? It's making it more better, taking what you have and figuring out what you can do with it. Here's a really super simple example of innovating.
Mm-hmm.
Say we were going to make paper butterflies command, okay? We were the Go with it. All right. Trust me.
All right.
So what we're going to do is we have an outline of a butterfly that gets printed onto, or has to be drawn, excuse me, onto an 8x10 sheet of paper.
Okay.
And somebody has to sit there and draw it, and they have to make it symmetrical, but they have to draw it out. Right. And they got to do this 50 times a day, you know, minimum. And then they got to cut it out, and, you know, then they stack them, and they all have to be. Now, how could we innovate that process? Really simple. Do you have an idea?
I do not.
What we do is we take a piece of paper. We take the 8.5x10 piece of paper, fold it so it's 4x10. We draw half the butterfly on it, and then we cut out that half, automatically making a symmetrical butterfly.
Mm.
So we just cut. We just innovated how we produce a symmetrical butterfly. We don't have to try and make it symmetrical. It's forced by process, and we just cut our time in half.
So that almost speaks to just being able to think outside the box sometimes, and being able to have the time and the group of people that you're able to work with to be able to kind of discover those type of things. So kind of, you know, looking at a task from a different way, or approaching it from a different method.
Exactly. And, you know, it's funny. You're just leading in. This is natural. This is awesome. You know, everybody's innovative. And I've said that a lot to you. And I want to go back. I go back 20 years when I was a NAVOSH officer. I was a Navy, you know,
you probably
OSHA.
Probably need to span that out for people, because maybe, well, Navy.
You know, occupational safety and health. That's what I said, NAVOSH. Okay. So everybody should know that. Come on. That's my presumptuous attitude. Anyway, so, you know, I was this NAVOSH officer, and I couldn't get, I worked, and I was in charge of a light industrial medium-sized plant, David Taylor Research Center in Annapolis. And I couldn't get the guys to wear hard hats. I couldn't get them to wear their safety glasses or their safety shoes. And I was just like, okay, I'm this young guy. I'm by myself. How am I going to get these guys to do what they need to do to be safe? So I thought about it, and I came up with this idea. I offered to buy them hard hats with their favorite football, baseball, whatever they want on the side of their helmets. The next thing I know, everybody is wearing their hard hats home. They're wearing them everywhere they could go, because now they're sporting their team. They're sporting their... So outside of... I even had a guy who wanted a cowboy hat, and I found a hard hat that is in the shape of a cowboy hat.
Now, that's a question that I could lead to, or that comes first to mind, is how did you take... So you came up with that idea, and sometimes I think we in the government or in the Department of Defense, we find that some of those ideas may not be able to be created. How did you go about being able to implement that?
Okay, so what I did is that, and I've said this before, before you can have reward, you have to take a risk. If there's no risk, there's no innovation. And so it's a part of, first I have to identify a problem, right? Or a challenge, as they say.
Sure.
Then I have to take the risk, and this is the part that everybody here, everybody has answers. Some of them are good, some of them are bad. You know, listen, I came up with answers for certain things that, you know, sometimes they didn't work out. How did I come up with that one? I simply looked at how am I going to get these guys to do this, and I saw a simple solution in a magazine. It was like Granger or one of those, right? And a guy standing there with a lunch kettle, and he's got his thermos, and he's got on his Green Bay Packers sticker on his
yellow
helmet.
Yeah, best stock images out there, right?
Right. So I thought, hey, you know what? This is a way to get these guys to wear this stuff. And as soon as I introduced it, boom, it took off. Safety glasses. So we had problems getting guys to wear their safety glasses. So I came up with an idea. You pick out, because they all were Buddy Holly specials, you know? They
looked
like, nobody wants to wear the birth control glasses.
Right, right.
You know, and so I went and I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. It costs the government $75 for those guys to get a pair of glasses. You go get a pair of glasses that you want that meet the ANSI standard, that have the shields, that can come on and off if you need to take them off. But you can pick the frames that you want, and we'll give you $75 towards your glasses. Again, big win. Everybody wears their stuff. I did the exact same thing with shoes, you know, with your safety shoes. let them pick the styles because they all look like Frankenstein's boots, the only ones that they, you know, that the government could offer you through the Schumobile that came through.
Right.
They were just ugly. They didn't want them.
Yeah.
And so these guys could go out and they got reimbursed. So did I meet the standard? Did I meet the mission? Yeah. Did it meet it the way that they always had? Didn't have to.
Right.
You know, and so remove, sometimes looking at a problem, sometimes innovating is saying, why do we do it this way? There's a great story about this guy who used to cook Thanksgiving dinner, right? And he always cut it. He always cooked it like his mother cooked it. He would take a ham, canned ham, and he would cut a third of it off, put it in a pan, put the little part on top, and cook it. Well, his mother came to visit one Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And she watches him put this ham and cut, you know, take it out of the can, cut it, and she asked him, why do you do that? And he says, well, that's the way you did it, Mom. And she said, the reason I did that is because the loaf pan that I had, because we were so poor, would only hold two-thirds of the ham, and I would have to put the part, the third part on top. It does nothing. It was because I had to. Sometimes we do things and need to reinvent them or have innovation because we've done it that way for so long that we don't have to do it that way anymore. We did it because there was a purpose before. And so we need to re-examine. What I'm saying is that everything is always up for reinvention. Everything is always up for innovation. Just because we've always done it that way doesn't mean there's not a better way to do it today.
That's something you got to always look for because I know in my past experience that there has to be some type of catalyst that interjects that or is able to kind of appear. And so I think sometimes when we're in this organization that we do have really good ideas that come from top, below, left, right, from the organization. And you're right. Sometimes you got to break that cycle because we will tend to do the same thing because it's easier, it's more familiar, it allows the system to go forward, you know, it's reliable. And so maybe that's something we can talk about at another time is just kind of how to ease that change or a change management concept and how we're able to introduce those new ideas and have a more adoption rate or have a better adoption rate within the organization about those type of innovations.
Well, and that's kind of what Lean Six Sigma. Mm-hmm. If you look at that, that's where the diamagic process, where you identify things and you define it, you identify it, you go through those different steps. That's what that's there for, and it is set up on a cycle. You know, there's a life cycle of technology sometimes. But sometimes it's not necessarily something that's measurable because people have ignored it. It's just the way that, you know, things have gone, and it's just what people are doing. So, yeah, I think you're right, and I think that's some of the stuff that we can talk about. But for today, I just wanted to define what we're really looking at because when we're talking about innovation, we're talking about can I innovate a product? Can I innovate my schedule? Can I innovate the way a process? You know, it doesn't have to be something new. It literally, more than likely, will be a way to improve the way that you're working currently and save time. And so that you can be free to do other things, you know, to maybe take on sitting on a team to create new products. It may be that you literally innovate, and a great example I thought was the guys from AFN in Europe was how they have their peer groups.
Mm-hmm.
That was an innovation that allows them to challenge one another in order to stay relevant. And it's permanent because as long as it's implemented, it's evergreen. You know, they're constantly challenging one another. They're constantly questioning, critiquing each other. So, you know, that was an innovation that has deep meaning to not just the organization, you know, now, but everywhere those people go. So, like, you know, they become infected, if you will, with this peer review virus. And now they share that everywhere they go.
But I was also going to say that also speaks to the, I don't think resilience is the best word, but like being able to accept another person's, I guess, input in a situation. Because I know from my past working with various different people, sometimes people are very close to their idea. They want to be the person that had the best idea. And once you're able to, like, present that to somebody, they have, it speaks volumes to a group to be able to do that, to allow somebody to kind of pick it apart and be not necessarily critical, but to have constructive criticism towards the final product.
You know what? The truth is that it does thicken the skin, if you will, which is good, because in this kind of craft, after having been doing artwork for 30 years, when I first started, I was a very thin-skinned guy.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, you know, because everybody is. It's personal. You know, I'm putting my heart into this, and then somebody gives me critical feedback, and I'm like, wow, you know, they just shredded me. But today, you know, if you don't like it, I'm like, okay, cool. Let's do the next one. Let's try it again.
Yeah.
And so, but that's all part of innovation. Again, that goes back to the risk, okay? You have to be willing to take the risk. And sometimes that risk is not risk like we're going to get in trouble. It's the risk of being ridiculed, the risk of people not liking it. You know, you have to make an investment in order for there to be an innovation. And so, before I think, because we're going to switch gears here in just a second, right? You have something else you want to talk about. If you take a look at what an innovator does, and an innovator is somebody, imagine this big field where there's a big concert going on, a big side of a hill, and there's all these people sitting on the side of a hill. An innovator is somebody who would get up and start dancing all by themselves, nobody else. They're just dancing to the music, right? They're kind of going nuts. And they keep dancing, and then eventually a few people stand up and start dancing with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? And then they sit down. But a couple minutes after that, the entire rest of the hill is up dancing and, you know, having, you know, hooting and hollering and having a good time. The innovator is the guy or girl who actually stood up and did that, but they may not get recognized. But they took the risk in order to see change. And then they saw that change take place. And that's what we need to do. It's not about necessarily reward all the time. It's about knowing that it's the right thing that we need to do. And then we just act on that in a positive way with management and things like that. But, you know, it's about taking that initial risk of talking with somebody and saying, hey, how about if we did this? How about if we did that? And so I think it's important that that's what... when we're looking for people to interact with us, you know, what do you see that you can improve in your processes? How could we improve how, you know, something is actually created or done, or, you know, could workspaces be improved?
Right, and that's the topic I was going to be talking about today. So one of the things that we want to do with the podcast is be able to bring up different topics similar to what we do with our Facebook. Again, if you go search on Facebook for the DMA Innovation page, it'll pop up. You do have to ask for permission, but I'm one of the admins on it, so we'll quickly add you on there to have you join the conversation. But one of the things I haven't posted up there yet, and eventually I will get to it, is a concept that we learned at my university through my grad program was we had a critical look at different organizations' structure and how that influences productivity and creativity and even innovation with the organization. Because if you go online and just type in innovative or creative workspaces for businesses, you're going to see a lot of open floor plans and things like that. And I think DMA, or the individuals that helped kind of coordinate the production floor, if anybody has ever taken a tour here or work here, you notice that we don't have the traditional two-layer or the traditional cubicle setup for our production floor. They're halved, and it's almost one of those things where you could stand up and you can look across the entire floor of workers and individuals that are at their computers producing and creating their products for their different outlets. And I think that was a good thing, but I also find that there is some ups and downs because you still suffer in this organization the typical office mannerisms that you find at more the corporations or large organizations, where you'll get individuals that are intently working, but you'll have individuals that may pop up from time to time that just want to have a conversation with you. And you never know that that person is going to be engaged in. And there were some things that came up, and the organizations out there tend to somehow be able to work with that. I think in ours, we still have the hierarchical ranking system, to where if you see someone of higher ranking in front of you, you have to stop what you're doing and you have to listen because it could be critical. But some things that we saw on there when we went through the class and everything like that was simple things, indications. And I know this may sound kind of childish, but maybe I can bounce this off of you. Like, one of the ideas was actually have an indication on your cubicle.
Okay, so we actually, where I worked at, when I worked at Carter Rock, we actually had a red cube, a yellow ball, and a green triangle that sat on top of one another. If the triangle was there, you could come and talk to me. I'm open. If the yellow ball is on top, approach with caution. If the red cube is by itself, don't talk to me.
And did that apply to even your hierarchical structure?
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody. Nobody bothered you if you were in the middle of production.
And see, I wonder how that would fly. That's one of the things I always was curious about with those type of organizations out there, and it's wondering if we could take a risk with that, because, you know, that's one of the things of having an open collaborative environment is still respecting people's spaces and the ability to work and get things done. And I think you see that with a lot of modern places that kind of innovate their workspace. You see a lot of open floor plans, people joining, like they have one giant desk where everybody sits together, but also has places to retreat to if they need to escape for a little bit.
So this is really cool. One of the things I looked at and tried a long, long time ago to get some folks, when we were originally bringing the concept of the building together, there was a thing called the teardrop cube. It was awesome. And what it did is that you could connect four to up to 16 of these things together, okay, in circles and pods. Mm-hmm. And what they would do is they actually covered overhead and gave you privacy, like your own office space, but would open up, you know, like the top would open up towards the center so you could do collaboration. Mm-hmm. And so you can have up to all 16 of you at one time collaborating. You could have just two. You know, so it was really awesome, and they were not very expensive, and they would have taken up less space and given us. It just didn't get adopted. You know, I always had, it was very early in some of this kind of idea stuff. So, yeah, there's all kinds of great things, but now what do we want to adopt as a command? And that's up to, I would say, somebody taking the risk to share the idea with leadership, and then the leadership has to take the risk. If it's worth it, you know, because maybe they know other things that we don't know.
Right.
You know, but
there's always a process.
Right. But there's, you know, you don't have to have red brick, yellow ball, green triangle. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have any kind of indicator that we could adopt. You know, you could just take a piece of paper that's red and hang it up, and that means,
right,
don't approach me.
And it doesn't have to be DMA enterprise-wide. It could be with any of the groups that are listening. Like, if you have a small group that you work with, that could be something that you could do in your own collaborative space. You just got to make sure everybody, you kind of have to communicate it, which is another aspect of coming up with these ideas, is that you got to make sure that everybody understands why you're doing it and the benefits of being able to implement such a process.
Well, the other great thing is that what we've talked about, these things can be implemented within a small group without having to go through anybody but your own group and your leadership.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they want to use the red paper thing that we just talked about,
right?
There doesn't have to be this command thing. It can just be one small group. It could be the, you know, the photographers for DOD. They want to use this, you know, while they're doing photo editing. If you see a big, you know,
some indication.
Right. They can adopt their own rules. Now, it could be something that does get adopted, you know, across the entire DMA enterprise, but I think that what you're sharing is, you know, you want them to give us their leadership these ideas, right?
Right, absolutely. So, you know, if you have that spark of innovation, if I had that idea about the cubicle concept, then maybe I'd go into the DMA idea box and submit that as a question. We've been getting a couple of them, and we've been trying to staff that information. That's one way, if you want to submit an idea to the DMA Innovation Program, is to find the DMA idea box. It's in the global, and submit your idea. You should be able to see an email come back saying that we received it and that we can process it and start putting it in front of people to see if it's a good suggestion.
Yeah, and I think that's I think that's a pretty good place for us to wrap up today. What do you think?
I think it is too. I think it was a good first show and talk.
Yeah. So listen, if you have any of your ideas, any ideas, please just shoot the innovation team your email or go on to the Facebook innovation page. Share your ideas, especially when it comes to how you can improve a process. Take the risk. You know, be respectful. Realize that people have made investments, and you know, but share your ideas, because that's how we're going to get better. Iron sharpens iron, as they say. And
we'll continue to keep talking about innovation as much as possible.
And making things no better. Have an awesome day, guys.